thank you very much for your generosity in giving in the Lord's tithes and your offerings. It just serves the Lord, and he just blesses you for it. So, quick question for you. Does everybody know what a blog is? A blog. So it's kind of like a letter that's published online. So the definition of the word blog is a regularly updated website or web page, and it's typically run by an individual or a small group, and it's written more like informal conversation. So I started this blog, and about 6 years after writing it, I would feel led in the spirit to find it again. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know where it was. I was working on creating graphics for our church website and social media pages, and suddenly I was just distracted with this thought, hey, I started a blog. I wonder what I wrote. I can't even remember. It's been 6 years. So as I'm trying to remember, I'm trying to think, you know, it was probably something that I, you know, something stupid that I wrote, something that was bothering me at the time, or maybe some epiphany I had about life. Thinking it was just some sappy thing that was happening, and I was kind of curious to find out, but there was a problem. I couldn't even remember the website. So I just typed in the search bar, blog site. So after searching through several websites, I finally found it. I didn't remember my username or my password. So you would think you'd have to go through all that password reset stuff, right? You put in your password, it tells you it doesn't work. You put in another password, it tells you it doesn't work. Then you change your password thinking, okay, I'll just change it and reset it and it'll be fine. But then you type in a password that you want and it tells you you can't reuse the same password. So, you know, anybody else ever have that happen to them? But, you know, the strange thing is I figured it out on my first guess. My first guess was what the password was. So that was another confirmation that the Spirit wanted me to find it. I was wrong, though. It wasn't just about my emotions at the time, but I wrote it as I was studying to be a minister. I think it was part of an assignment that I was doing that I had to do every chapter. I had a project that I had to do, something that prepared me for ministry. So, you know, I'm reading it. I don't even recognize my own thoughts. It sounded like somebody that was important, mature, and well thought out. Somebody else wrote them, for sure. But I didn't even really remember putting that much effort into it. So today we're going to talk about my daily walk. As I began to read, I began to see that younger me had some really good thoughts. Younger me seemed to think that, seemed to have the right words of what I needed to read now. Sometimes we need a reminder of what we've studied. Sometimes we need a reminder of the roads that we've walked or the trials that we faced. Lessons we've learned along the way. You don't just learn lessons for those moments. You carry those with you through life and, you know, use them throughout your life. Growing up, I spent a lot of time with my grandma. My mom was a single mom, and my grandma and I just became very close. My grandma would watch me all the time, and we tell each other that we're best friends now. But I learned something about my grandma. She has little spies following us around all the time, and she finds out everything. We used to joke that she was part of the mafia, but sometimes I wondered if it was a joke, because she had people everywhere. But I learned something in that time. I learned that you just don't lie to grandma. If I mess up, it was just better just to confess, get it over with. Most of the time, the discipline was much less harsh when you told her right away. So one day, I'm at grandma's house, and I've got my niece Lily with me, and I'm watching her. We're just watching TV, playing a game, you know, doing something, I'm not sure. But I had one of my grandma's favorite glasses, and it had Elvis on it. And she, if any of you know her, she is an Elvis fanatic. I dropped the glass, and I broke it. I was so, so upset. I'm like, she's going to be so mad at me. So I tell Lily, you know, this is a learning opportunity. I tell her, we have to confess. We have to tell grandma as soon as she gets home and let her know that we, you know, I broke the glass. let's clean up the mess. I said, just don't tell her until, because she has a habit of calling people. And so just don't tell her until I get home, or until grandma gets home. And, you know, we'll tell her. It's important to confess what we've done right away. So we cleaned it up. We got a new cup out of the cabinet, went on playing the game or whatever we were doing. The second grandma pulled in the driveway, Lily jetted out to tell her. She could not wait to tell on me. She was running. I was running after her, telling her, just wait for me. Don't tell her. I want to tell her. I want to be the one. But before I could get to her, she told grandma. And, of course, Lily's laughing the whole time because she thinks she got Aunt Jackie in trouble. But I couldn't believe it. My niece was a traitor. I thought she was on my side. But thankfully, her eagerness to tell grandma made her laugh, and so she wasn't nearly as mad at me about the cup. So back to this blog I started. So it focused on three points, three things that I found vital to living a biblical life. And the first one of these points is integrity. Proverbs 10, verse 9 says, whoever walks in integrity walks securely, but whoever walks crooked paths will be found out. So when I was chasing Lily down, trying to stop her from telling on me, I was really trying to walk in integrity, and she was not letting me. Most people strive to live a life according to good morals and good values, being kind to other people, helping people in need, not intentionally trying to cause harm to other people. And all of these things are great examples of integrity. But spiritual integrity is no different. And, you know, we want to, when we live our lives according to what the Bible says, we're showing those around us that we have spiritual integrity and that we can be counted on to uphold the values that we're teaching. You know, practice what you preach. So all of these things are really great examples of integrity. It makes us more trustworthy. Living life according to God's word makes us more dependable. Another proverb, chapter 11 and verse 3 says, the integrity of the upright guides them, but the unfaithful are destroyed by their duplicity. So our integrity guides us in what we do, and it helps us to grow, and it helps us to help others. If we do as we say that we're going to do, as what the Bible tells us to do, it allows us to be just a good example to other people. And when a situation arises that needs guidance, we have an idea. We have foundation to stand on to help us provide that guidance in a godly way. When we face a situation where you could do what is right or do what is easy, what would you do? Would you, when nobody's watching, nobody's going to know, right? Nobody's ever going to know. If nobody's watching, nobody's going to see you do anything. Nobody's going to know. Nobody's going to know that you maybe scanned an item at the self-checkout when we actually had two. Nobody's going to know that I was cussing somebody out on the highway for cutting me off. Nobody's going to know that I maybe don't pray as often as I should or read the Bible as often as I should. Nobody's going to know. But God knows. God knows every little thing that we say and do, and you know. And now, since it was easy to do the one thing, maybe we start doing other things when nobody's around. And before you know it, we start slipping in front of people and doing those things in front of other people, and then it just kind of snowballs. So not only do we do things like that in private, but now it's in public. And we get comfortable with things getting, and that gets worse. You're no longer a person of integrity, but now you're a person who's untrustworthy, a person who's not dependable, and a person who's not living a biblical life. It takes intentional effort to live in integrity, and the Bible has instructions for you. Read it with intent. Use it like Google. How many people Google for everything? Maybe the weather, what's the weather like? Why are turtles green? I'm gonna Google it. What's a good gift to give my friend for their 50th birthday? I'll Google it. How do I fix my washing machine? Now the Bible doesn't have those answers, more than likely. but I think you kind of get the point. The Bible has answers for everything in our life, and it should be your go-to source for anything in life. So the next thing I wrote about in my blog is initiative. Now here's where I kind of realized that younger me had really been on to something. I mean, integrity's kind of obvious. We should all live in integrity, but initiative, that's one I didn't really think would be high on my list, I guess. But initiative is a quality that every person should possess. When we need a task completed, we shouldn't just drag our feet, we should just do it, right? Not wait for somebody else to tell us. We should all show initiative and begin the task even before anybody realizes it needs to be done. In the kids' movie, Robots, it's one of my favorite movies, Mel Brooks' character says, see a need, fill a need. It's his motto, and it's kind of become mine too. Initiative is taking ownership of the tasks. Even if they're not your tasks, take ownership just like they were yours and do them. When you know something needs to be done or someone needs help, make it your job. So Luke wrote about this in chapter 10 when he tells us one of Jesus' parables about a man who had been badly beaten and left naked to die in the roadway. Excuse me. He tells us about people that just passed by this man, people who you would think would be the first to stop. There was a priest and then also a Levite, both people who are known for religious servanthood. These people even went to the side of the road, the other side of the road, to avoid him. And then comes the person that you would least expect. Samaritans were enemies of the Jews. They were considered traitors. But even so, the Samaritan stopped to help the man. He helped the man up. He let him ride his donkey to the inn. And he even paid for the man's stay for however long he needed to have, plus the extra expenses that he might incur. I would think that those things would be like food or bathing or, you know, maybe another set of clothes or something. He could have done the same as the rest and just kind of went, you know, around trying to avoid them, but instead he took responsibility. He practiced initiative and jumped in. Can you imagine if we all practiced that in everything in life? Can you picture a world where people didn't hesitate? They just jumped in. They were happy to do whatever it was that was needed to make things work. What an amazing place that we would live in. As a leader in a church, it's important. Initiative is an important quality. Ministers need to know what every need is in the congregation. We need to know ahead of time to organize games and events that help the church grow. We need to be prayerful and anticipate things that maybe somebody else might not realize would happen or be aware of. We need to be the first ones to set a positive example for the rest. We need to practice initiative. But the rest of us can be that too. If we all lived on mission all the time, not just in our church, what if everything we do, we joyfully sacrificed our time, our resources, and our talents? Who knows what that Samaritan man was headed to do, but he understood that it was his moral responsibility to help the man in the road. No one had asked him, he just did it. So who are we helping when no one asks, when no one looks? Jesus tells us in Matthew 25, verse 45, that on Judgment Day, God will tell us, whatever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do for me. So that means that when we have an opportunity to go and do something and help someone and don't take it, we're not upholding our duty to God. The third point that I wrote about was failure. And this one was a little funny. Younger me thought she knew what she was talking about. failure is easier than success, right? Success takes work. Sometimes the easy route is the route of failure, and sometimes we're just okay with that. We are complacent and just, you know, we're okay with not being able to do what it takes. But when we don't do these things, it opens up a gate and it welcomes failure. Letting your guard down in just one of these areas can cause a butterfly effect, meaning just one small mistake can cause you to lose your integrity, lose your trustworthiness, and then also your character's destroyed. And people don't look to you like they did before. But here's where I went wrong in failure. I originally wrote that we must guard ourselves against failure, but that's not exactly right. I mean, sure, we don't want to fail. We want to succeed. But that just kind of makes it sound like failure is the worst thing to do. And honestly, there's so much to glean from failure. Ralph Waldo Emerson said this: our greatest glory is not in never failing, but in rising every time we fall. Failure is learning how not to do something. Sometimes we take hard lessons, but we can take comfort in knowing that God's with us through all of those lessons, even in our failures. If we turn to Psalms 145, we'll find just that in verse 14. The Lord upholds all who are failing and raises up all who are bowed down. So God is actively helping those that are struggling, and he's even using our missteps as for his glory and his purpose, even if we can't see it. So picture this. In one hand, God is embracing us in our failures, and never leaving us alone. And in the other hand, for those who seek his wisdom in their failures, he's raising them up and he's blessing them through that journey, learning and using our weaknesses to teach us and to teach others. So no matter what, God has his hand on us. When we walk with him, we never lose. And that's such a comforting thought. So while we should certainly strive to succeed at everything we do, when we fail, and it will happen probably many times, especially if you're like me and you're a little bullheaded, instead of being discouraged, remind yourself that it's just a step towards success. Not a back step necessarily, but a side step. When we can use what we've learned in our failure, we make better choices. So as some of you may know, I'm a teacher's aide at an alternative school. Students are sent to my school for many reasons. Usually it's to catch up on credits. Maybe they've missed out on some schooling for illness, or maybe a trip or something, or maybe just didn't do their work. They also are sent for behavioral reasons, such as violence, drugs, threats to the school. But one common thing is most of them come from broken homes. Most of them come from homes where gang violence and drug addiction are very, very common. Homes where they're not cared for, where they just feel so unimportant, and that's why they're struggling. So this is my fifth year with them. And when I started, I thought that my job was to teach them, was to help them with their algebra or their world history or English class. I thought that it was my responsibility to help them to learn in those areas. I tried everything I could think of to get these students to understand. I printed out algebraic equations, and I printed out different poems for them to read, or formulas to these problems, and help them to understand why it's important to stop wars even before they start. But it didn't exactly work for everybody. Some students, yes, that worked. They were able to do their work, and it was, it was good. But for others, it didn't even break the surface for them. I had students who would just get frustrated, and I had somebody just throw everything from the table off onto the floor because they were angry, and some would stand in my face and cuss me out and threaten me, or some would just shut down and not do anything. So not knowing what to do, I sought God's help. I was praying about it because I needed to reach these kids. I needed to help them with what they're going through, and I was failing. So there was a student one day, and I think God sent me the student to kind of show me what to do. He was being especially difficult. So I just pulled them aside in the hallway, and I just said, "Listen, man, what's going on? Why are you so angry? I'm trying to help. I'm trying to, I'm not trying to tell you that you're doing a wrong thing. I'm just trying to help you get through this. What's the big deal?" And I learned something. There's usually an underlying reason for behavior. In this particular case, he told me he was hungry. He had spent every other week with his mother and every other week with his father, and his mother didn't have any food in the house. She was a drug addict, and she didn't work. And what little help they did receive in government funding went to formula and diapers for his younger sibling. The kid just felt like the world was against him. And he felt like I was against him, too. And I hated that. After I found out, I was just so brokenhearted. I'm just like, you know, here I am getting frustrated because he's not doing his work. He's not doing what he's supposed to be doing. And I feel like I'm the bad guy because, you know, all he needed was he's hungry. How can you concentrate when you're hungry? So I just asked him if I could give him a hug. And as soon as I did, he started crying and he hugged me back. So we have a food pantry at my school. You can take items, you can leave items. But that day I took, I had a Walmart bag in my desk, and I just took a bag and I just filled it up and I sent it home with them. And I didn't know if that was the right thing to do for my school, but I knew it was the right thing to do for this kid. He was so hungry. And from that day on, I never had an issue with him. Anytime he was upset, anytime he felt that he was not doing what he was supposed to be doing, we had a conversation. And he started doing his homework. He started getting really good grades. He started coming to school every day. If he was struggling, he would just ask for a minute in the hallway, hey, can we go chat in the hallway for just a minute? And, you know, of course, let's go. Once he knew I cared, he let me in. And that changed his whole high school career. God blessed me that day, and through me, he blessed my student. I'm not perfect, and I still mess up all the time. But I'm going to try to remember that Psalm 145:14, and I'm going to seek him, his wisdom, in my failures. So through this blog that I wrote, my goal was to put down on paper some ideas that were just kind of swirling around in my brain. I just wanted to get the thoughts sorted out, and try to find out what I was trying to say. Like I said, I believe it started as an assignment in one of my classes. What I didn't know, though, is that I would be reading this again 6 years later and reflecting on the last 6 years and wondering if I measured up to what I wrote. As someone studying the Bible, I've really begun to hold these three words close to my heart. I will be prayerfully working every day to become better at these traits. As it not only helps me with others, but it brings me closer to my Creator. With this, I've also learned that self-reflection is also important. It's important to pay close attention to those that you interact with, but also to pay close attention to what you do. That day in the hallway when I was, you know, somewhat angry with this kid for not doing anything, I had to sit back and think, you know, what am I doing wrong? What's going on? How can I change what I'm doing? Perspective on this. We often find it really easy to analyze others, right? We judge, even though we shouldn't, we judge. But what's important is to judge yourself, to analyze yourself. We need to take an inventory of our own words and our own actions. So self-reflection and constructive criticism are essential in learning. And Albert Einstein actually once said, anyone who has never made a mistake has never tried anything new. I would add that their lives are probably not very fulfilling either, right? So we need to become people of integrity and people of initiative and people who embrace failure. We need to be the people that we say we are, right? So study the Bible. It's our manual to this life. It shows us how to be. The stories in this book are true, and they'll help you in any situation. Walk closer with God. You can't see the temptation that's around if you have your eyes fixed on God. be a person of integrity, do what's right even when nobody is looking. We must be bold and take initiative too. Don't be a lazy Christian waiting for somebody else to do the work. Get your hands dirty, serve, invite your people to church, help out where it's needed. So embrace the lessons learned in failure. Focus on the Father for correction and wisdom and try again. You're not worthless to God because you failed. He has you in the palm of his hand and is ready to show you the way if you let him. Is that you? Do you need to let God show you the way? Do you need to make that decision today to allow Jesus to come and take control over your life? Because he's ready and he's waiting for you. All you need to do is repent. Give it to him. Give it all to him. No sin is too great. He loves you so much. He loves you more than anything that you could possibly do. As we all bow our heads and close our eyes, I'd like to ask you to examine your heart today. Is there something that you need to be forgiven for? Is there an area of your life where you're lacking integrity or initiative? Do you just feel like a failure sometimes? Come and find your forgiveness. Let's pray.